Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast, our third podcast episode of the week, recording this early on a Friday morning. And today we're going to do another deep dive into one of the teams in the A-League men. And today it's going to be Melbourne City, which means I'm joined by a Victorian contributor at Front Page Football, and that is Caden Foley. Caden, how are you doing on this Friday morning?
I'm good, mate. How's things going? Excited to get into discussing Melbourne City.
Yeah, and things for me are great because if you're a Manchester United fan, you're a big fat loser this morning. Luckily, Caden. Well, luckily for these circumstances, Caden's an Arsenal fan, but that's also just unlucky in general. So, although at the moment,
I don't think Chelsea fan can compare at the moment.
Not at the moment, but if we want to get into 10-year arguments, I've probably got some arguments there. Anyway, this is an A-League podcast, and it's a Melbourne City podcast for today. So, first of all, if you're listening, Caden did an excellent piece during the week, which came out a couple of days ago, I think on Wednesday, on Melbourne City's off-season, basically, because they've got a lot of decisions to make this off-season when it comes to player recruitment, also with the manager potentially. There's quite a few things for Michael Petrillo, director of football, and his team to kind of look over. And in the midst of all that, they are now in a position where they're scrambling kind of to get into the final series, which would, Caden, be astonishing if they didn't, because that would be the first time ever under the ownership of the City Football Group that they haven't made the A-League men finals. So there's that too. Basically, let's start there with the team on the pitch at the moment and what's been happening this season, because it's not been a great season for Melbourne City, not by their standards anyway. And they're now in a position where the Wanderers play Brisbane tonight. So that's going to tell us a lot more about basically Melbourne City's fate, because if the Wanderers are to win, then if I just quickly get the table up just to remind myself.
Well, I've got it up. So Western Sydney are four points ahead at the moment. So if they win tonight, obviously there'll be 7-point gap. And then, tomorrow will be the derby.
And Melbourne City could be in a situation where they're going into a derby and they have to win. Or definitely avoid defeat. I mean, even if the Wanderers win tonight, that's 7 points, and Melbourne City draw in the derby, like that's now suddenly a 6-point gap between the two of them, with just 3 games left. Like this is pretty much a must-win derby, right, for Melbourne City.
Absolutely, and it's going to be especially tough against them because, as we know, Tony Popovich really likes being compact at the back and shutting down these types of games. He doesn't let them go too free flowing, which is probably what Melbourne City wants at the moment, just due to the nature of them not being clinical in front of goal. So they're going to want to turn this into a bit of a basketball match. So I think it's going to be a very tough game tomorrow night.
Yeah. Do you still feel, because we're going to talk mainly here about the off-season that's coming up for them, but do you still feel they can make the finals now?
I mean, as long as it's mathematically possible, I mean, sure, they definitely could, but I think it's going to be extremely tough. I think, as we've already said, it really is going to depend on how the derby goes tomorrow night. If they don't get a win or draw, I think it's probably going to be pretty impossible. But, stranger things have happened in this league, as we all know. So, yeah. But if they drop points tomorrow, I'm going to lean towards probably not.
Yeah, I mean, and that Wanderers game tonight, here's where I would say they've still got a chance, is because I don't trust the Wanderers at all. So, You know, if you told me that Brisbane would rock going to Western Sydney tonight and win 3-1, like, would I be shocked? No. So that's kind of would leave the door open. And then just quickly, I think I went over this on Wednesday with Jake on the short pod that we did, but City's run in, so they got the derby, then it's Perth at home, that's a winnable game, then it's a game against the Wanderers, which we mentioned on the pod on Wednesday, is basically, you know, could be the kind of grand final to make the finals. And then they finish with Western United at home. So there's two games there that are very winnable. There's the game tomorrow, which is probably the hardest. And then there's the game in there against the Wanderers, which could be the decisive game. So yeah, it's all happening for Melbourne City. And we already discussed on Wednesday about their game against the Mariners, a game which they really should have won. Definitely. So they're not making it easier for themselves. And one guy who hasn't made it easy for probably his team this season, and from all reports, it seems like he's not probably making things very easy behind the scenes either, and that's Jamie McLaren. And Jamie McLaren has had a bad season by his standards, kind of similar to have a team has had a bad season by the club standards. And so what's he got, Caden? He's got 8 goals, right?
Eight goals a season, which is his lowest in, I think, since he returned to the A-League. So yeah, it's definitely been a down year for him.
So 8 goals, lowest tally since he returned to the league. When you watch him, well, when you watched him earlier on the season, when he was, you know, and in the middle of the season when he was actually starting, things didn't seem like they were clicking in terms of runs weren't being rewarded or the timing of runs wasn't right. And it became, I mentioned this during the season, like, it became this weird feature all the time of press conferences where Vidmar was seemingly always asked about, well, he always had to kind of maybe defend McLaren or always say something about, oh, you know, the service, we're not seeing his runs, we're not seeing his runs. But then the underlying stats, which I don't have in front of me in terms of XG, but I remember someone pointing out like weeks ago that, you know, he is actually kind of underperforming really where he should be in terms of goals too. So he's missed a lot of good chances, which is not something we associate with Jamie McLaren, which kind of leads you to believe is something else going on here. And then we saw there were reports during the season about, you know, reportedly that he turned down a new contract. You know, there's now some rumors with Auckland that are brewing of him potentially basically going there. You'd imagine it's like an Australian marquee signing, for their startup. But how are you seeing this situation with him? Because for me, it seemed like it's something that has been kind of festering in the background. And now we're seeing that he's been taken out of the team and he's now coming off the bench. And I actually think he's going to come off the bench for the rest of the season. I think it's kind of something where they're just phasing him out because they're resigned to losing him.
Yeah, I think so too. I will say with the underlying numbers, he has also so scored 8 goals this season, and his XG is 12.25. So yes, he's underperforming, but I want to say remember he at the season at start of the season he was on penalty duties and he missed two penalties, which is worth a lot of XG. So when you take that into account, he's a bit more closer to his actual XG. But nevertheless, yes, he's had a poor season in front of goal. With the contract stuff, I think yeah, that definitely has not been beneficial to the club. I've heard some talk about it, and there are some rumors that obviously we can't 100% confirm, but I've heard that Jamie has asked for a lot more money than Melbourne City are willing to pay for him. And I've heard that most A-League clubs probably wouldn't pay the money that he's wanting right now. So I think he's a bit potentially struggling for a contract, but these things can change like rapidly. Another thing with Jamie, he's very much a off the pitch, he's very much a homebody. He loves Melbourne. He's grew up in Melbourne. Loves Melbourne. So just had his first kid. So we're not sure whether he's going to be willing to move to a whole new country to join Auckland is still a question that needs to be asked. There were some talk potentially maybe Western United might have been interested, but again, I think he's probably going to have to take a bit of a pay cut from what he wants. I think if he will want to stay in Melbourne, I think.
I think the reality here is it's probably not as cut and dry as, oh, like, yeah, he's gonna go to Auckland, or there's probably some moving parts here. Yeah, the context that you give with his family situation, and yeah, you're right, like, he's kind of born and bred Melbourne boy, right? So there's that too. Dare I say, though, if I'm Bill Foley and I'm looking at, can I chuck some money somewhere to kind of make a bit of a statement signing? Yeah, maybe I'm probably going to look at Jay McLaren. I think it's interesting that you mentioned there, though, like, Melbourne City aren't willing to pay the money if that's the rumor to sign McLaren to a new deal. So there's being willing and there's being able to. So they probably are able to, but they're probably thinking this isn't actually worth it for us, which is interesting too. And if Melbourne City are thinking that, then kind of no surprise, really, that a lot of clubs potentially are thinking that too. And I think the thing with Jamie too, I would say, is, if he's not going to be taking his chances, then it becomes quite hard to justify his place in the team. And I think that's what we're seeing, right? Like, he doesn't get involved enough in build up. His pressing game has always been decent, so no problems really off the ball. But his combination play, like, if you compare him to Fornaroli or him to Taggart, like, it's chalk and cheese when we're talking about strikers that can actually link play, 1-2s, combinations, all this sort of stuff. He doesn't bring that enough on a consistent basis. I mean, how many games this season? Again, we'd have to go through all the stats, but how many games where he's probably had like less than 20 touches?
Oh, heaps, heaps. It's yeah, heaps. I think he's a very obviously clinical striker when he's in form, but he's also extremely one-dimensional as a player. He's very much a running behind poacher tap in. He reminds me a lot of like obviously due to the City Football Group connection, like Erling Haaland, who in Europe
Is a League
with
Two player.
we are a League Two player who can't link up the ball and can't link up play. But yeah, he's very similar to that kind of play style. And I think Melbourne City are going to want someone who offers a bit more next season. And we've already seen that in the short glimpses from Max Caputo, got an assist against the Mariners, was really good pressing, press Bobby Kaltak, or Brian Kaltak, sorry, off the ball. To win that, I think it was the second goal. So yeah, I think they're probably going to look in other directions, and I think we'll get to that in a little bit about potential replacements who could come in.
That was that first goal on Tuesday, where he just bullied Kaltak and then cut the ball back. Let's talk about Caputo, because Jake was telling me on Wednesday how he's the captain of the Max Caputo fan club. Are you like vice captain? Where are you in that club?
Yeah, I think I'll leave the captaincy to Jake. He's the king of young Australian footballers, so I'll leave that to him. I'll delegate and work under him. So yeah, I'll stick with the vice captaincy there. But yeah, Max Caputo has been great this season. The crazy thing is, it feels like he's been on the bench for Melbourne City for ages, but then we realise he's still only just turned 18, like a few months ago. So this guy, he's coming into really good form at basically the perfect time, and this could do wonders for his career in the A-League and potentially overseas, I reckon. Because yeah, in Melbourne City's NPL system, the last few seasons, he's just been scoring goals for fun. So if he can start proving that he can do that at the A-League level, I think it won't be too long till he is consistently an A-League starter.
He's actually already got more assists than McLaren this season. So I think he's
Actually,
got
I know.
three and McLaren's got two.
Three.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He's a great player and looking to see a whole lot more from him.
Yeah, and then four big chances created. So you can already see immediately like his link up play is just better. Like, you know. So that's the reality I think for Jay McLaren at the moment. Like he's, you know, it was kind of awkward after the Newcastle game. I watched the press conference with Raf Napoli and he said how like he was asked about Jamie's, you know, continued basically absence from the starting 11. And he just said, look, Max is playing well. And at the moment, you know, basically Jamie can't get in. And it's funny though, because it's like if you're Jay McLaren, you're like the highest goal scorer in the league history and you're thinking, right, so I'm just now second fiddle to this 18-year-old. But it's like, well, yeah, that's the reality. You know, your performances can't dip. Like this is what happens when you go through rough periods. And look, you asked me right now, like, yeah, we were just talking about it briefly a few minutes ago, but I'd be shocked if he's there next season. I'd be absolutely shocked. But yeah, Caputo though is a silver lining from a Melbourne City standpoint coming out of this. And he's still 18, like you say. So I don't know. I don't think you can kind of just go, oh, now we've got Caputo, we'll be all right next season if McLaren leaves. I
No.
still think you definitely have to, yeah, go and get a replacement. So that's just too much of a burden you'd think on Caputo's shoulders. But yeah, his hold up play, his ability to bully opposition defenders is huge. It's huge for them. And credit to you because it was during the season you wrote a piece where you actually mentioned, well, you mentioned they should consider playing both of them together, which they do
Yeah.
sometimes, maybe late in a game when they really need a goal. They might just chuck on Jamie with him. But in the end, it's actually worked out a little bit better. They've looked better with him just as a sole focal point.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because
but you know, their performances in recent weeks, I feel, have been better definitely than what we saw in kind of that middle part of the season. So, yeah.
yeah, credit to I thought yeah, credit to Caputo because I thought maybe he might. To really get the best out of him, he might need that experience in McLaren beside him to kind of make those runs in behind, just give him a bit of experience. But he's just taken this chance with two hands and hasn't looked back since. So yeah, credit to him.
Okay, so some other stuff when we unravel Melbourne City season. A big part of this season has been injuries. And we've seen, like, it's kind of been never ending, you know, like we've seen obviously Lecky suffering, you know, multiple injuries. Naboo was out for a bit. Tilio then recently obviously came back, him and Lecky came back on during the week, but they just can't seem to, yeah, get everyone on the pitch together. And the other thing is, like, going back again, some comments from Raf Napoli during the week after Mariners game, and there's still like this kind of hope of like, oh, you know, we just got to get everyone right, we're gonna get everyone right. But it's like, guys, you got 4 games left.
Four
Like,
games,
it's, yeah, it's time's running out. You know, what do you make of this, all these injuries they've had? It's been very, very difficult. I mean, Arslan was obviously out for a little bit with injury early on, if I'm not mistaken, and then he had suspension as well.
He arrived at the club with a bit a broken toe, so
Yeah.
he's playing on that for at
Yeah.
the start of the season and. Leo Natel also arrived
Yep.
having done ACL 12 months prior to signing. So he hadn't played football in like a long time. So, yeah, and then Marin Jakulic also was had a little bit of a knock, I feel like, at the start of the season. So, yeah, they've just really struggled to get their best 11 on the pitch. But I think that's also a sign that I wrote about this in the piece is they've just got a really old squad, their squad's aging and it desperately needs a refresh. Like,
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the ages though, because if I've just got it in front of here, I'll just sort this by age. So you look at the ages though, and you look at how many guys over 30 though have actually been brought in the last kind of 12, 6 months. Like Jamie Young, Suprayan, Arslan, Jimmy Jago, and Terry Antonis are all in that age group. And they've all been brought in the last, yeah, within the last 12 months. So what it is kind of, I don't want to say panic signings, but almost like we didn't find the player that we wanted. So instead, we're going to kind of go with someone that we know and trust who can be a bit more of a stopgap. But you'd think, again, don't have the stats in front of me, but the age profile or the average age of this squad in comparison to squads in previous years, like it wouldn't be close. I don't feel anyway. Just looking at it at face value. And now Naboo's 31, Curtis Good's 31, even McLaren, who's, maybe a different situation, but he's 30. Lecky's 33,
33.
Nuno Reis 33. So like you're right. And then even you've got guys like Jordan Hall, who's barely played, and you'd think is probably gonna leave at some point in the near future, but he's like 26. Like you've got like a guy who's, if you're gonna have a backup centre back who's gonna play 10 games in like 3 seasons, like at least have a guy who comes from your academy and is like 18 or 19 and can just build his way into potentially a first team role in the future. So like that's always been a weird one for me. So yeah, and then you're right. Like when you really look at it, there's not a lot of guys under 25 that can actually contribute right now in this team. And that doesn't mean that you have to have that and that's a be all and end all. But like Melbourne City, you think of Jordan Boss, you think of Tilio initially before he left. Like they've kind of been able to be successful, but be successful while still producing some good young talent. And at the moment, I don't feel outside of Caputo, I don't really feel like they're kind of staying true to that moniker. I don't know what you think, but there's not really, yeah, outside of Caputo, there's not really other guys that you look at in this team and think, oh, there's a young player who's kind of, breaking out and stuff. I'm not too sure.
Well, yeah, there's a couple that will, they're not, I don't think they're going to be as good as Caputo. Like, yes, but there's still a bit of time. There's players like Ben Mazzeo, who came in early this season when Naboo was injured, and he
Ben
came
Mazzeo
off the.
injured at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty, he's just back with the NPL team
Yeah,
now.
yeah.
Back with the NPL team now that they've got, because they've got so many wingers, which was also discussed in the press conference after the Newcastle game about just why do they have, it was basically asked, like, why do they have this many wingers and how are they going to get the most out of them? And Ralph Napoli, well, I'm unfortunate for him because he's just assistant coach, had to fill in because Vidmar was unwell and he's just like, yeah, I'm not sure. We just got to try and pick the best ones, just pick them on form. And But yeah, so Ben Mazzeo, one, is all right. Harry Politidis, a young fullback, looks okay. Starting to get a bit of time now. And yeah, other than that, that's about it, really.
Yeah.
The others are just their two backup goalkeepers in Patrick Beech and James Nieuwenhuizen. And they one, I think those two next season will probably compete for the starting spot. But yeah. Definitely, they need to get back to developing young players, and I think they will because this season they've finished developing all their academy facilities. The club have fully moved into them now. All the club work out of the offices out in Casey, all the boys' academy are at these facilities. So now I think they're going to start hopefully developing these players at a better rate of success. And yeah, but the thing with academies is you have to think of these not in 1 to 2 season cycles. You need to think of these over like 10, 15,
Yeah.
20 season cycles. That's how these academies work. So I think in the next few years, I think you'll start to see a lot more come through. I heard from a source that I think the under 16s at the moment at Melbourne City, they're really high on that group of players. So I think in a few years you'll start to see some of them break through. And they are currently in Singapore playing in a seven-a-side competition against like big clubs. Like I think they beat Everton yesterday, so they're starting to get some good results from those young boys. So
Interesting.
hopefully, for the next few seasons, we'll see fewer of those start to pop up.
Yeah, it's just been strange, some of the, yeah, when you look at this positionally. And you know, we have to say though, like, they were obviously kind of gutted in the off season, like losing someone like Aidan O'Neill, who's kind of borderline irreplaceable, right? With what he can do. Yeah, like it doesn't make it easy. What, like, the keeper situation, for example, you mentioned there. If I compare it to, like, we've spoken about this before on the podcast, with like Alex Poulsen and Wellington, who have kind of, they brought in Jack Duncan, but Jack Duncan was always brought in as a safety net in case Alex Poulsen wasn't actually ready. But Poulsen was always going to be their guy. And I'm just wondering whether Jamie Young could have been, I don't think Jamie Young's been awful or anything or too bad. But instead of maybe just bringing in Jamie Young and saying, you know, having that win now mentality of Jamie's, you know, he's 38, but he's, you know, he's been around the block and he can contribute for us now as a starting goalkeeper. Could he have actually been brought in as more of a backup option, and then you let Beach and Nieuwenhuizen kind of fight for the number one spot, and then long term you figure out what you've got with those two? It's little things like that, you know. And the winger thing, yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this before off air. It's just been bizarre. Like, Natel, don't get me started. Like, I know you mentioned he had the ACL injury and stuff. That is important context. And he, if I'm actually being, you know, as honest as possible, like, he has moments where you go, yeah, he definitely has something about him, but he's too inconsistent for a foreign signing. Like, you know, you can't justify it, right? And even, you know, Yakalish, who I thought was really good at the start of the season, but he's kind of over time just become a little bit patchy with his output, I feel. And then the new boy they got in Vicente Fernandez, haven't been too impressed by him, to be honest, in so far. And yeah, like, it's a lot of really Arsenal. Arsenal's obviously been unbelievable. He's probably a top three player in the league on his day. Soprian's been okay, but like, it's a lot of okay, you know, with what they've signed in terms of the foreigners. And with Melbourne City, I think we've had this standard with them where when they sign a foreign player, you feel it's not going to be just okay, it's going to be great. Like, you look at last season, Van de Ven, Berisha, Thomas Lamb, like, those guys were definitely a much better group than what you've got at the moment. You've maybe got Arslan, but then outside of that, you just don't have a lot of consistency from those other foreigners.
Well, I will say with Vicente Fernandez, he came in on late notice and he had not been playing, so he was not match fit. And then Scott Galloway got hurt, so he had to step up and start playing going minutes way earlier than they wanted him to. I think they definitely wanted him to like only be getting up to playing full 90 minutes like around now in the season. So he's very like underdeveloped, so I wouldn't go too hard on him. So he's had a rough go. And then, yeah, the Leo Natel and Marin Yakalish have definitely been not consistent with what we've seen from Melbourne City. Marin Yakalish, I thought, was okay, but yeah, has dropped off a bit. Leo Natel, he's good, but I think his tempo really hurts him as well. He gets very riled up
Do you think he should
easily.
have been sent off in the Newcastle game?
I think so, yeah. Definitely looked like he leaned in
Yeah.
and head butted in, but the referee, like at all the A-League games, referees have like a person who judges their performance, like a more senior referee, and he was sitting in the press box and he said he was happy with that not being a red card. He said he felt that was because it was very odd. He thought it wasn't violent conduct. He just thought it was a coming together of players. So he was happy with that. But I definitely think it wasn't in the spirit of the game. He probably shouldn't have been sent off. And I feel like that's about two or three times now he's been lucky to be not sent off in games. So it's, yeah. That's just another thing that's hurt them, I think, a bit with him getting wound up, and then because of that, losing his composure and not being able to finish in front of goal or set up good assists.
Yeah. So he's on this long list, which is this is all in Caden's article, which he wrote on the site frontpagefootball.net. There's 13 uncontracted players for the end of the season. So obviously he's amongst the loans. So you've got Yakalish, Natel, Vicente Fernandez, and Marco Tilio, who are the four loans which will expire at the end of the season. Then outside of that, you've got Jamie Young, Jamie McLaren, Nuno Raish, Terry Antonis, Matthew Lecky, Curtis Good, Andrew Nebu, Jordan Hall, and young Harry Politidis, as Kaden mentioned before. So all those guys are uncontracted. That's basically nine owned players who are uncontracted, and then you've got the four loans. So either way, like whatever happens here, you're not going to retain all those guys. You wouldn't think they're going to try and retain all those guys. So there's going to be definitely some movement come the off season. All right, let's out of that list, of the owned players, let's say, because we don't know with Tilio what can happen there. I mean, you'd assume he'd go back to Celtic, and give it a go again. I guess I think we all hope so too. Yeah.
Again, sorry. Again, I've heard that Tulio could potentially want to go back to Celtic, especially with how Celtic, because under Brendan Rodgers, he's not been getting much time at all. But I think he feels that with Celtic's performance in the league, that Tulio might be able to outlast Brendan Rodgers at Celtic, and then maybe someone coming in with a new set of eyes might be able to give him a bit more of a go next season or the season after. So I think he will want to go back to Celtic and start playing again. But again, maybe he will just, I think it all depends on what happens with Celtic this season. I don't think they're going to, I think it looks like Rangers are going to win the league this year. So if Brendan Rodgers stays, he might try and push himself out and try and go somewhere else. If Brendan Rodgers leaves, I think he might go back to Celtic and try again and try and break back into that team.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I'd be disappointed if he just gave up on Celtic already and just said, like, oh, let me just sign permanently again with City or something like that. Like that would be far too premature, right?
No, I don't think he will. I mean, he doesn't want to sign permanently, but potentially maybe another loan season just to kind of advertise himself when his contract at Celtic runs out.
It's a good point. All right. So out of that list, of the, Jamie Young, McLaren, who are you kind of thinking stays, goes, and maybe is there any that are in the middle and you're not sure about at this point?
I'll start off with Graphics leave. I think Jordan Hall, I think he's definitely gone. He just hasn't broken through at all. He's played like 10 games in 4 seasons or something like that. So I think he'll want to go at this point in his career where he can play potentially like a national second division team, something like that. I think Nuno Raish will also potentially leave. He's slowly fallen out of favour in these last season and a half. Jamie Young, 38 years old, I think they're going to want to move away from him as soon as possible. So I think those three are definitely gone. The ones who I think will stay are probably Terry Antonis, Matthew Lecky, Andrew Nebu. I'm not sure about Curtis Good. He might, I'm kind of. I
You'd
think,
think they make a decision between good or race, right?
yeah, and I think between that, you'd probably want to pick Good. I think he's a better player.
Yeah.
But also, as we'll get to in a bit, there's some rumours of some young centre backs who could be joining Melbourne City who might compete with Good for a spot. So that's a question that will hang around. And then McLaren, I think, will. I'm leaning towards he'll probably leave, but yeah, that's changing by the day. I think like any day we'll find out something, I think.
Yeah, well, that's McLaren. it's possible that if he's too insistent on, I want this amount of money, and he could actually price himself out of a move elsewhere, and maybe he just comes back with his tail between his legs, and he has to kind of, re-earn the
Yeah,
trust. That there's that
definitely.
scenario. Yeah, that could definitely play out. Okay, and then you don't think, I definitely don't think Natel or Fernandez are going to stay on. Would Yakalis be someone that they would? I don't even think that's, would that be even possible to try and make that permanent?
Potentially, I think he has an Australian passport, so
Yeah,
that
true.
might be a thing that could help them a bit. But whether they'll want to keep him is a different question. But I think if they do want to keep him having a Australian passport will definitely help with the registration rules.
Definitely. Okay, so you touched on potential incomings there in terms of centre back. Obviously, you're referring to Kai Truyn, who's been linked with a move to Melbourne City. Josh Nisbet's obviously been linked with a move. That one's had less weight recently because he kind of came out and put gasoline over it by saying that he hasn't signed any contract and that he's maybe looking more to Europe, which I'm actually happy that he's doing that. Because we love Nizzy and he should really go to Europe before going to another A-League club. But is there anything, A, is there anything else that maybe you've heard that no one else has heard out there? Is there any potential incomings? But also, what areas do they really need to strengthen? Because I think you probably need to get a striker. I would also say, I guess they got Dzeko, but and maybe you give that time, but probably just have a look for another six if possible, if there's anyone out there. You're not going to be able to get an Aiden O'Neill again, but this is something that I was thinking before when they signed Jurgakovic. Like, why couldn't they have signed Clayton Lewis as well? Like, as an example, he's someone who could have maybe been a really good option as a six for them. Just retrospectively thinking about that. Fullback. What about right back? Because what about your boy Callum Talbot? Your favorite player in the Melbourne City starting 11.
Yeah, I love him. But Callum Talbot, I think they're going to stick with him for he. I think he's got another 12 months on his contract, I think. I'll have to check that. But I'm pretty sure it's another year. He obviously they signed him. They thought he was basically the best young right back in Australia. That's what they were saying when they signed him. Whether it's worked out that way, I personally don't think so. I think there are better right backs that are younger than him, or around the same age as him. But I think they will stick with him for the rest of his contract. Left back, I think they'll sign someone else because I don't think they want to. Well, actually, they've got Aziz Baic who will come back
Yeah.
from loan next
Yeah.
season. So he'll come back. And then Scott Galloway obviously got hurt a few weeks ago, and then he had a hiccup in his recovery, I think last week, so that's taken a bit longer for him to come back. But yeah, I don't think they see him as a starter anymore in this team. So I think they might look to bring in another left back. But that being said, they've also got Harry Politidis who's coming off contract. I think out of all the ones that we spoke about who are expiring, I think I'm almost 100% sure he'll get an extension. That's not me. I haven't heard anything, but just watching him and seeing how he's been integrated to the first team, I think they will extend that as soon as possible. So I think he'll break through a bit more as well. But then, yeah, their biggest issue is going to be the wingers next season. They'll basically. I wrote about this in the piece where obviously Lecky, Naboo, all off contract. I think they're going to have to probably re-sign both of them just because of all the Australian wingers coming off contract this season probably aren't good enough for Melbourne City. I think there's I think both the Brisbane wingers, like Milo was nicked off
Yeah.
contract. I don't think they'll look towards him. One potential thing maybe is Stefan Kolakowski off contract at the end of the season.
Yeah,
Do they
return.
want
Yeah.
to maybe bring him back in? But I'm not sure whether they'll look to do that. I think they'll probably recruit foreign wingers alongside renewing Lecce and Nebu next season.
Yeah, and then there's the keeper situation too. Well, obviously, if Jamie Young goes well, there's. Do you think if Jamie Young was to leave, they'd definitely sign a keeper, or do you think maybe they let the two young boys fight it out for the number one spot?
That's a good question because I was looking at keepers coming off contract next season, and I know one player who is coming off contract is Macklin Freak from Brisbane, who I actually really like as a keeper, and I think he fits the Melbourne City system a lot better than Jamie Young does.
Jack's the captain of the Macklin Freak fan club, so you can go talk to him about that. Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's done well at Brisbane in his time, especially under Aloisi before he left at the beginning of the season. He was like, would you say he was like one of the best keepers at the start of the season in the league? I
Macklin
thought he
Freak.
was. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And you know,
I
th
know.
actually, it's interesting you mentioned that because he also showed, I always talk about this Macklin Freak, is his ability as a ball playing keeper. And we know with City and the way that the City Football Group, the model, you know, the keepers have to be very good with their feet. So you're right, like it's you're putting two and two together there. Yeah, that kind of works out. So, and he's at a good age, you know, for a keeper too.
I think he's 26. I think he is 25,
Yeah,
26.
25. Yeah.
So they might maybe look to bring him in and potentially maybe they might say, all right, you come for 2 years. We'll try and flip you for a profit to somewhere overseas. And then by then, the two young boys will be like 22, 23 years old. And then they can just keep repeating that cycle. So that might be a move they make. Then the only other contracted keeper would be Hewitt Bell from Western United. I don't think they'll bring him in. So I think it'll be either they'll go with Freak or they'll just go for some keeper out of nowhere, like from overseas, that they find good to see football group connection.
Yeah.
But I think I would like to see him sign Freak. I think he's a really underrated player and would be a good in that system, as you said.
Well, if should they sign Truan and that's consistent with what's out there, what do you make of that signing?
Yeah, that'd be a really good signing. It's crazy. Like he's 21 years old and he's already played like I feel like nearly like 100 games of A-League football. So you just forget how long he's been around. So I think this would be a perfect move for him. And another one that, like we always say in A-League, that you want to try and flip for a profit in the league to overseas just to keep making money for the club. So I think it'll be a really good signing for them.
Yeah, and
And I think
then,
he's been really good for Brisbane this season.
yeah, I think he's had a yeah, I think he's probably had a better season this season. I still feel like he could be better than what he is. I remember when he first came onto the scene, and I felt he was yeah, like very exciting. And I don't know, he kind of maybe plateaued. Maybe it's also Brisbane have kind of not really helped him out with kind of. He's been played at a fullback. He's been played in midfield. He's been played as a centre back. He's kind of, you know, his versatility has almost been his enemy in some instances, you know.
Yeah, and we all know,
Yeah.
sorry, we all know what's obviously all the off the field stuff of Brisbane probably doesn't help either in those
No.
young players' development. So I think getting to a good, stable club in Melbourne City that has good facilities, some of the best coaches in Australia, I think that could really help him as a player.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe his versatility at Brisbane doesn't work, but maybe at Melbourne City it's actually a bigger asset. You know, that might help you get more game time, for example. Who knows? Now, Nisbet, who Look, I don't really want to talk about this too much because I don't really want to see Nisbet signed for Melbourne City, to be honest with you. But if you're looking at their squad, like the thing is, they've had to kind of shoehorn Jurkovic into playing as an eight a lot this season, which
Yeah.
he's done okay there, to be fair. But I still think Jurkovic is best in a pivot as a six, alongside someone else. And Antonis has done a lot better as an eight than I expected. Definitely, I was very, very against the signing when it happened. But he's definitely shut me up in recent weeks for sure. But then outside of that, like, there's not really that other. They've got Alessandro Lapane who's played there, to be fair, and maybe he could come in next season, you know, a bit more improved and stuff. But yeah, that would be the argument for the Nisbet thing to kind of really pursue that, because he would be a really good number eight, for example, for them potentially. Otherwise, you know, I'm sure they can find there's other options too. That's actually, I mentioned about them signing a six or looking for a six, but really maybe it's actually an eight who might be a bit more important for them. Someone who can really complement Arslan in that midfield role. And you mentioned, let's actually pivot to this, because you mentioned some guys in the piece who could be possible targets. Did you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I had two that I wrote about in the piece, and I'll start off with the midfield just because that's what we're on. So I offered up potentially Rene Piscopo at Newcastle Jets. I think he's obviously struggled with injuries recently, but I think getting him at a club where there's less pressure on him to perform consistently
Well, the way things are
would
going,
be
he might not
better.
have a club at all at the end of the season.
Yeah, true, true, true. But I think him at City could be a really good. You could either have him as that eight, as that, or like a backup to 10 for Arslan, or he can also play as a winger as well. So that's all. He's a really versatile player. He's at a good age. He's still only 25. So, yeah, and he's a Melbourne hometown boy as well. So just him moving back to his hometown, being around family and friends might also just be another added benefit for him to kind of improve his game a bit, because I mean, we all know like when he's on, he's really good. He's a really good young player. That's why he was so highly touted, and he was in Italy when he was really young. So we know he's got that in him. So we just need to see if he can potentially come back to Melbourne, might bring that out of him again.
Yeah, and then we're preempting where if we assume that McLaren leaves, they're gonna need a nine as a replacement. And you mentioned Jon Iredale in the piece as an option, which I thought was really interesting. Because yeah, like that's a guy who's although people might think, well, he's in the Socceroos squad, so he must be playing overseas. So, you know, why would he want to move back? But he's not actually really playing that often overseas.
No, he gets about 10 minutes off the bench every game. He's usually brought on late as the impact kind of player. He has a few starts, but potentially now with him getting a taste of the Socceroos squad, he might want to come back to Melbourne City where he can start week in, week out, to cement himself in that squad for the next World Cup. And also, I think he'll offer a bit more. Like we said earlier with Caputo, he'll offer a bit more than McLaren. He's a big striker, so you can use him as more of like a tight end, or he can run in behind like McLaren. And then also, his hold up play is not too bad as well. It's probably not to the level of Caputo, but I think it's not that bad either. So I think he's one that you could potentially lure back with just say to him, like, we're rebuilding, we've had a few bad years, we want to get back to where we were. We think you can be a part of that, and we'd like to see you. We want to help you cement your spot for the 2026 World Cup, and it might be something, he might be open to
Yeah,
that.
it's definitely something you can pitch. That's for sure.
So that's just one option, but who knows? You might just want to, now that he's got a taste of Europe, he might want to stay there and try and fight for his spot. But he is, so he's at VfL Wiesbaden at the moment in the German second division, and his contract is up at the end of the season as well. So
Yeah.
that's another thing.
Yeah, it's another big factor, definitely. So those are the two players you mentioned in the piece. Was there anyone else outside of that that maybe you didn't write down that you thought this would actually be a very interesting signing for Melbourne City?
It's always tough with Melbourne City because but then
Yeah,
we
I know. They're
when
gonna come out with some fucking foreigners from left field, aren't
yeah they're going to find someone from the Colombian fourth division who's going to
they?
score like 25 goals and 10 assists, so it's so hard to predict. I think their model, from what how it looks, is they want to sign all the best young Australians, and then they want to assist them by bringing in the best imports that all the clubs can find. So I think that's kind of their model. So when you look at a position by position basis of players coming off contract this season, there's not a whole lot that I think Melbourne would be that interested in. So I think they're going to have to probably go look overseas somewhere and recruit some, Brazilian 17-year-old wonder kid or something like that. But so Melbourne are a hard club to predict.
Yeah. And then we've been talking about recruitment for a lot of this podcast, but there's also promotion from within. And you mentioned a couple of NPL guys in the piece that City at City who could potentially feature next season. Was there any others in there as well? Do you want to elaborate on some prospects that are in the NPL setup at Melbourne City that maybe their fans maybe aren't aware of, or even other A-League fans as well listening to the pod?
So the main one we've already seen this season, that's Ben
Yeah.
Nazeo, 18-year-old winger. He looked, I don't know what you think, but I thought he looked okay in his
Yeah, but no,
short time.
Mazzeo looked good in his brief appearances, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's one that still needs to develop a bit, but I think he got like one or two goals, so it's not too bad. The other two are thinking of both got ex contract extensions prior to this season, where Emin Durakovic and Arian Sulemami, both two wingers, they potentially could promote to potentially
Oh
be
no,
like,
more wingers, Jesus.
more wingers as, but I think more, not, they might not get like a whole heap of game time, but I think just having them around Matt Leckie, Andrew Nabu would just be really good experience for them. Because those guys are such hard workers, they're proper model professionals. I think it would be good to for them to experience that and just learning from them. And both, but unfortunately, prior to this season, they both had pretty serious injuries, so they probably would have featured this season, I think, with all the injuries they've had, like Melbourne City have had, but the timing just didn't work out. But I know. Durakovic is back in the NPL team now. He scored, I want to say he scored a hat trick a few weeks ago. Sulemani, I think, is still a little bit off coming back, but is not too far. I think those two are going to be ones to look forward to, I think. All three, those three, including Mazzeo.
Yeah, and then so we're almost an hour into this podcast, and we probably haven't mentioned the one of the most important narratives throughout this whole Melbourne City season, which is the coaching situation, because they obviously saw Radovan Vidicic sacked after two games, which I said at the time was basically an admission of them getting it wrong with promoting him in the first place. And then Aurelio Vidmar's come in, and basically he's been the manager the whole season, and what's your take on how he's gone? Because there's two sides to this where you can say, well, look, he went into a team that was clearly devoid of confidence, and there's a lot of new players, a heavy rotation in the offseason, and he's kind of stabilized it and They've looked a little bit better in recent weeks, and now they're still with a chance of making finals when after two rounds it looked like, holy shit, they're going to be like in the bottom three the way this is going. Or there's the, yeah, but he's had pretty much all the season to work with these guys. You still got so much quality, and they haven't really gotten going in terms of putting like a good 2 month stretch together of or like a long winning streak, to really push into that six. So how do you see Vidmar's time in charge?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like you said, he came in off the back of that 6-1 loss to Adelaide in round two,
6-0.
6-0, even worse. Yeah, 6-0, and I think he got the call like 2 days before, like from Michael Petrillo, and said, "Can you come like tomorrow to just help us with this issue?" I'm pretty sure he's like good mates with Petrillo, so it was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll help you out."
Yeah, they're very close going back to the Adelaide United days. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're very close. So he did. I think he did well stabilizing them. The thing, obviously, they at the start of the season they also had the Champions League, the Asian Champions League. So I know for like the first. Like what month and a half of Vidmar's tenure? I think he only had them on the training park like once or twice a week. So he really struggled to kind of set his own ideas up in the team. So I know that was something they struggled with, and he mentioned a lot in the post-game press conferences. But since they've been knocked out of that competition and they've had a few international breaks, they've slowly, like you said, kind of steadied the ship and gotten them mid-table, which I think with this squad and how this prior season had gone, I think was an okay result for Vidmar. I think if he gets it in the finals, I think that'll be a success for him. I don't think, though, they'll want to stick with him next season. I think this is very much a caretaker thing, and they also probably might be a bit spooked about how Rado, when he was there, Rado Vidicic was there, and they brought him just as a caretaker initially, and then he got a few good results, and then they gave him like a four-year deal or something crazy. I think that might have spooked him a bit, so they might be a bit more careful now. But yeah, I think just in the last few days, there's a coach who will get to come on the market, and I think it'd be a really good choice for them to sign next year. Should we go and just go into that?
Yeah, so no, one thing that I wanted to ask you though is from what you've seen with like the discourse amongst City fans, like what's the general feeling towards Vidmar? Is it kind of what I was saying about no, he should have done more, or is it kind of, he's been given a tough hand and he's done a decent job?
I think it's been a bit in the middle. There's a bit both ways. I think obviously City fans are so used to success, like dominating the league every season. So now they're having a bit of turbulence. They're a bit shell-shocked by that. And I've seen some call for like Vidmar out and all this sort of stuff. But I think overall they're just like, this season kind of is what it is, and we're just going to get through it best we can. Hopefully, get finals and then maybe go on a run in the finals and pull something off. But yeah, I think it's been pretty middling opinions on him.
Yeah. And then, so in the likely event that Vidmar doesn't continue, that obviously creates a vacancy. So there's a few names that immediately pop to mind here. So Patrick Osorbo is definitely one. Patrick Osorbo, who worked under, sorry, who worked with Raf Napoli, for example, when he was there previously. And it was interesting because, and I've forgotten Caden, the assistant coach, who left during the season for another opportunity. At Melbourne City.
Yeah, I've forgotten as well, sorry.
Yeah, names slips of my mind at the moment. But Raf Napoli came in as his replacement, basically. And then it was kind of like, Yeah, it just kept feeling as the weeks going by of, and then because Norbo did that propaganda podcast on what was it on the
Oh, I don't know, some, I don't know what it was, the
yeah,
podcast, I saw
well,
clips of it, but
Calcio something, I don't know,
yeah,
but where
culture,
he's
yeah.
just like, yeah, he just spent basically like the whole time talking himself up and his methods and stuff, and it was like, all right, mate, we get it. You want an A-League job again. So like, if this ends up in, let's just get Paddy back, because we know what he can do with a lot of these players too, and we know that we're going to be near the top again with his methods, then that wouldn't surprise me. Also, though, a guy you mentioned in your piece, who you've just mentioned there, has become recently available, that also wouldn't surprise me, and that's Arthur Pappas, because the City Football Group history, having worked at Yokohama under Ange. And also the style of play. Like, I definitely think if you put Arthur Papps instead of Relia Vidmar maybe coaching this team this season, would he have gotten more out of it? Yeah, probably. And we saw in the Champions League that he outfoxed him as well.
Yeah,
You
beat
know?
Hornsey.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I think with Casorbo, if that does, if they were to just to get like him back, I would be like a bit kind of let down of the not showing that much like, what's the word, like,
Ambition.
yeah, ambition, because yeah, he's done it, and but we saw that's why he did not go great, and he was very not quick to adapt his style at all at that club, and I think that really cost him. And more the same thing work. His whole thing is he's like a drill sergeant. He just wants players to run really hard, work hard for winning the ball back high up the pitch and getting tap-ins basically, which is why Jamie McLaren is so good under him.
Call Joe McLaren a tap-in merchant.
No, you said it, not me. But I don't think that would be a very ambitious move of him. I think I'd like to see PK at a different club, not backed by such a wealthy ownership group. Just to see what his level actually is as a manager, because I think clubs, managers at big clubs like Melbourne City can, their weaknesses can get hidden just by the differential in money and the facilities. I think the best option available is Arthur Pappas. I think he's a really, really good coach. Obviously worked under Ange. Gib role in Buriram, where he was sacked for very odd. The owner of
It's
that
the Thai
club,
League. They
though,
do weird stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
they do weird stuff. They were in first place. He got them like from fifth to first place and then sacked him. So it's not like he was
It's
doing
like Hume
horrible.
City. It's Hume City stuff. Yeah.
So I think he would be really good. He plays. He's very big on the expansive, good, attractive football, fast flowing, attractive football that Melbourne City want to play. He's like a football nerd. I think we all saw, I don't know if you remember that episode of the All Access
Yeah.
last season
Yeah.
where they followed him, and he's a tactics nerd. He loves football. I think he'd be really good. And yeah, I think it'd be a really good signing for them. I think he'd get the best out of all of the young players at Melbourne City.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it'd be interesting. Were there any other managers? I'm actually trying to think off the top of my head right now. You can't like.
Yeah, another option is Dario Vidicic, who's the head coach of the
Yeah.
women's Melbourne City team. He's just won the premiership with them. I think he's actually
Would that be
a
too
very good
early
man.
for him?
It could be a bit early for him. I think he'd probably need a bit more time if he wanted to transition in the men's game. But he also might just want to stay in the women's game. That's also a
Yeah.
valid career path as well, these days. So, but I do think if they wanted to look like that, I think he's a good coach. He's a lot more tactically astute than I think his dad, Rado, was. I think he would probably do a bit better than Brado. But like you said, it's probably a bit early. I think give him another season or two with the women and then maybe come see what he wants to do. But yeah, that's another option. Then yeah, potentially like the Brisbane coach who recently left, I'm blanking on the name. He had a few health issues, but Ben
Ben
Kahn.
Kahn.
If he is healthy, obviously that's the most important thing. If he's healthy, he's another one who could look at.
What about I mean we know Russell Iwobi only just took like to join Kevin Muscat in China during the season and stuff, but like part of his decision to do that was because, you know, Brisbane off the pitch are in not great shape at all. And I'm just wondering if he might get a taste in 6 months or something and go, you know, I actually do want to be head coach again. And Melbourne City is probably one of the more stable clubs in the league to do that. And his style of football definitely would suit
Yeah, that's
City.
it. Sorry.
And of course he worked as an assistant at Yokohama in the City Football Group under Muscat. So that's a potential option again. So
That's a great shout. I didn't even think of that. I think I'm guessing them both being he would probably know Michael Petrillo from being
probably.
out of Adelaide, so there's also that connection there. But I've heard that he's on a massive bag in China as well, so that might be a it's one thing that might keep him over there for a bit longer. But yeah, that's another possibility. It's an interesting time for Melbourne City there. I think the next coach they pick is one I think they'll want to stick with for like a while. So I think probably either Pappas or Aloisi would be probably be two of the best options available at the moment.
But yeah, Ross Aloisi and Kevin Muscat enjoying their bags on a weekly basis in China. Definitely. All right, Caden. Excellent discussion, very in depth. You can see this is a man who knows his stuff big time. And you can, like I say, I'll plug that piece again. It's a very insightful piece. Goes really in depth a bit more into all the stuff that we just spoke about here. And yeah, about Melbourne City's upcoming off season, because it's a big one. A massive off season for them if they do want to get back to dominating the regular season like we've seen them do in the last few seasons. And look, for their sake right now, there's still time that they could get in the finals and they could make a run. Who knows? And that would make maybe some of the points made on this podcast moot. But look, I still think even if they make it, they're going to probably be sixth. You know, they're probably going to have a tough matchup in the elimination final. I don't know. I don't really know if there's really anything that's going to be meaningful that comes out of the season, you know?
I mean, in football, you always want to be planning ahead anyway. So these kind of discussions we've had won't really be moot at all if they make the finals. There's still issues that we're going to have to deal with regardless, like all the contract situation, whether they make the finals or not, that's still happening. So
True.
yeah, these things. It's just how it goes in football.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Top work. Go and check out Caden on Twitter. You can follow him. That's at Caden F. Wrights, I believe. Caden.
Yep, that's it.
So go check him a follow on there. And make sure you're following us as well, Front Page Football, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads. We're on LinkedIn as well. And obviously on here too, on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. And let us know what you think. If you're a Melbourne City fan listening, let us know what you thought about some of our opinions there. Do you agree with, some of our takes there, or have you got maybe different ideas for maybe what the club might do this offseason? Feel free to let us know. Send through your questions as well. Maybe we'll answer them in the next podcast. And yeah, anyone else listening who's an A-League fan, NPL fan, you got any ideas for podcasts that you want me to do and get a guest on, then absolutely we'll look into it. So just yeah, engage guys, engage. And we will reciprocate. Always. So yeah, that's been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Thanks again, Caden. And yeah, thoroughly enjoyed that chat. I don't know if we will do another club deep dive this season. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. I know me and Jack have been talking about the Mariners a little bit, so possibly. We will see about that. But I've been your host, Christian Marchetti. That's been the Friday edition of the podcast this week. I'll be back on Monday talking everything A-League men. Until next time, it's bye for now.